the Hall Pass podcast. This is our season one, episode two. Today we're going to be delving into standardized testing. This is Jenny Wheatley again, and I do want to kind of introduce standardized testing before we get started. So standardized testing is a way for college admissions to have a snapshot of your academic capabilities and your testing capabilities as well. So standardized testing are SATs, ACTs, SAT2s, AP exams, TOEFL for some students who English is not their first language. So we're actually going to delve into this a little bit more. Going to ask everyone here today about a little bit more information about what they think about standardized testing. We're going to answer some really, really important questions that a lot of parents have asked us in the past. So let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
What's going on?
So we have the same boys here again, Richard, Travis, Punkage, and Jay. So I want to start with this question of a lot of parents and students ask me a lot, why do standardized tests matter?
So when you're looking at the grander scheme of things, again, we begin with what I first say is your quantifiables. First two, there's your GPA, whether it's weighted, unweighted, or based upon your rank, and then there are standardized test scores. I usually separate it for my students into four categories. The first is the main test to apply for colleges, either the SAT-1 or the ACT. I want to dispel any kind of myth about this. The ACT is not preferred by East Coast schools or anything of that sort. There is a clear kind of, a translatable score, whether you take one or the other. So it's the SAT-1 or the ACT. You don't have to take both. Then there's the SAT-2 subject tests. Most private schools will require about two subject tests. And then you have the APs and IBs. And then lastly, you have things called national exams. National exams are a little bit more obscure to some parents. Things like Chemistry Olympics, Bio Olympics, they're usually hosted in the spring. What standardized test scores do is they complement what grades show. So the way to think about it, again, from last episode, grades reflect effort. Test scores reflect aptitude. Another way to look at it is that grades reflect competitiveness level based upon the micro scale of your school itself, whereas standardized test scores quantify you based upon a national scale.
Yep. Analogy time.
Sorry, I'm excited. Funky's so excited about this analogy.
I get all serious and I put out all you guys go into analogies. All right.
I remember in one Winter Olympic, I forget which one it was, but the Jamaican bobsled team came out of nowhere. And like, you kind of don't know, like these colleges in the middle of a state, they don't know the academic rigor that happens, say, in Irvine or in New York or any other place. So they have to balance that GPA, the grades you get from the location you're at, with the standardized test. They standardize everyone across the nation or across the world, similar to how the Olympics. You know, you don't know how great a basketball team is from Italy versus the United States versus all these other countries. So they all compete in a standardized location, mm-hmm. you know, in the Olympics. And sometimes a student in some high school that where maybe 30 students go, you never know, they can get a perfect score on the SAT. And that will show colleges something. So anyways, that was my bobsled analogy.
Wah, wah, wah. Just kidding, Luckage. I think Travis won last.
Well, now, we can all go home and watch Cool Runnings, though.
Cool Runnings. But, you know, that came to me like 5 seconds before we started.
No, that was really good. That was really, really good.
Can I just say that I hate standardized testing. I hate it. Because you look at a student's body of work, right? So colleges start looking at your grades and all your stuff academically from, what, like sixth grade onward now? And then something that you do in a matter of 3 or 4 hours holds so much weight. And I understand that we need a measurement of students of some sort to kind of have that, I guess, translation you're talking about, like in the Olympics, mm-hmm. Italy versus United States. We need to see how a student from Maryland would do on the SAT versus a student from Orange County. But it's so unfathomable to me that so much weight of your high school career and your college applications could be held on 3 or 4 hours of work. Because could easily bomb it, yeah. You know? And I know that you can prepare and prepare and prepare, and that should lead to success. But sometimes you're a high school student, that's a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. and you freeze up. And I hate it, and I wish I had an alternative, but
what
I
is
don't.
The alternative? Yeah.
But I don't. I think and it's I know it's necessary.
Yeah, it's an imperfect system
For sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of issues. I think even today it's a huge debate as to whether or not standardized tests that we use today are something that we should be using for our students. So a lot of students or a lot of people have argued that there's a lot of cultural bias in these tests, and they argue that it only promotes teaching to the test and for students to just memorize information rather than actually learn that information. But yeah, like Punky said, what's the alternative, right? If we need a basis for comparison across the nation, across schools, that standardized test is what provides that for us. But
what about your GPA though? So we have your API, right? Which sort of roughly converts your GPA to how it would relate to a different school. And your GPA is a much more accurate measurement of kind of your talents as a student
because
it takes in 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. It doesn't take in 3 hours, right? So, and I know that a couple schools don't require it. I know that Wake Forest, I think, mm-hmm. doesn't take SATs or ACTs or doesn't require it. So why don't we see more schools doing that? Because if I'm an admissions officer, I would look at your GPA and your essays and your extracurriculars and your references big time, way more than I would what you did in 3 hours, bored as heck, in a classroom.
I think the biggest problem is really that the GPA is, and this is something we talked about last week, the GPA is calculated differently for every school. So I think the example we used was like at Compton High School, a 4.0 GPA doesn't necessarily mean the same for Troy High School if you got a 4.0 GPA. And so because that number itself might be the same, that doesn't actually tell us much unless we can get into the specifics. Whereas when you have an SAT score and you know that you got a 1600, just on that one number alone, we should be able to learn so much about that student.
Yeah, it's all predictability. I remember seeing students in high schools that I wasn't familiar with having 4.0 GPAs, top of their class. But their SAT scores were in the 80th percentile, 70th percentile, things mm-hmm. like that. And then I saw other students at high schools that were very rigorous, that had high APIs, that got 3.2 GPAs, 3.1, I mean, relatively lower GPAs than a 4.0, obviously, but they had perfect scores in the SAT. And I started seeing this trend with students, and I'm like, okay, it'd be nice to track them. And I think there have been studies out there where they track them in college and in life and career. And I think that's why the SAT and standardized tests and ACTs are still looked upon as a standard bearer, because they do have aptitude inside of it.
Yeah, and I don't, I mean, they're flawed. I would completely agree that there are flaws with the tests, but from all the students that I've worked with, I've found that there's a very high correlation between students who have straight A's or really good grades in very rigorous courses and their standardized tests. They tend to have very high ACT, SAT scores as well. So I'm gonna assume that there is going to be a good correlation that we can find between the two.
Can I pull our panel here real quick? If you were an admissions officer, I guess, how much would you prioritize SAT scores? Would it be a high priority, low priority, or whatever?
That question is important, but it's also the range. Like, I give a lot of buffer. Mm-hmm. Like, if you like, what was out of 1600 now? Mm-hmm. If you pass like 1100, 1200 threshold, you've almost passed a bar.
It's kind of have like a benchmark.
Yeah, a benchmark. Now, if I was in MIT or Caltech, maybe my math would be more like 770,
right,
800,
right.
You know, different kind of things. But it all depends. Some schools have like a smaller buffer, a smaller range of acceptance, I guess, versus a wider range. But that's just.
So I want to mention something really quickly. College Board has learned that there is a discrepancy. They've learned that there is an educational gap. They've learned that there's an inequity gap. And so what College Board has tried to do with their new 1600 SAT is to make it so that they are coincides with what students are learning in school. And that way they're not, because what the standardized testing does is that people who are upper class tend to do better on the SATs. And it's because they have the resources available to them. They can go to academies. A lot of Korean students go to Hagwon. They go to Elite. They go to, you know, other kind of, you know, maybe C2 or some other types of SAT support, you know, resources, and lower income students just don't have that. And so College Board has seen this discrepancy. And so what they are trying to do is to close that gap by creating a new SAT, a format that is going to close that gap. Now, the other thing I want to mention is it's almost nearly, even though it's very difficult and I can see that there's a cultural bias that teachers are teaching to the test, I get that. But a lot of times colleges, there's no other way to standardize academic capability without looking at standardized testing. And again, this brings a lot of controversy. controversy because, you know, how are we going to close that gap? And it's still not, it's a one-time test, right? Like you sit one time for 3 hours and you take a test and you're supposed to show admissions like, this is how smart I am. So it is very difficult. So to answer your question, Travis, number one, I feel like College Board and ACT are trying to close the gap, the educational inequity gap, just a little bit by redesigning the exam. The second thing is colleges, in terms of rank, are going to rank your GPA higher than they do standardized testing because they do agree that the fact that, you know, you could have been sick, you could have had the flu, you could have had a stomach flu when you took that exam. That's the other reason why colleges are now offering things like score choice or super score, because they know that sometimes you can't take it in one sitting. Sometimes you have to take it multiple times and then show, hey, you know, I improved, or, you know, I did really well in some of these sections, which we'll kind of get into a little bit more. But I feel like they're varying a little bit of that standardized testing, whereas years and years ago, not as many colleges were offering super score or
score choice.
Score choice. Yeah. They're like, no, you can take it one time, two times, three times, and then you just have to submit it.
And I think it's also important to note, Travis, that there are a variety of standardized tests now, like not just SAT, like back in the day, just SAT, ACT, but even AP tests. That's a form of standardized test also. Everyone's getting measured in this subject matter, calculus, history, U.S. history, whatever it is. So I think when college admission officers look at, and colleges in general, they look at the totality of all the standardized tests. So if you have one really bad one, they take it into account amongst all their standardized tests, but also amongst the entire application too.
Yeah.
So it's a holistic approach, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So
here's an example. We had a student who got accepted to Hopkins Early Decision this year, and her AP tests and SAT tests and ACT tests were not very high. All of her AP exams were twos and threes. She didn't get a single four or five on any of her AP exams, and her GPA was a 4.0 unweighted. And, you know, and she had amazing extracurricular activities. And so that kind of speaks to the holistic, you know, element of college admissions, that it's not just, you know, oh, you only have twos and threes on APs, you can't get accepted. It doesn't work like that. Of course, you are going to be competing with students who get fours and fives on the APs. And of course, it's probably much easier to get in with those types of scores. But I'm not saying it's impossible.
But I got to ask, you know, if there is a better way to do this, mm-hmm. send us the email to...
The Hall Pass Podcast at
Yeah,
Gmail?
we can totally use your kind of case study. We can use your question. Of course, you'll be anonymous, and we'll be able to answer your question a little bit more specifically.
One thing that I'm wondering too, so say you're a student, like you're like an Einstein, and you get so bored by school that you kind of fail because you're just bored with the subject, you already know it, and then you just ace your SATs. Is that almost a red flag or an alarm bell for college admissions committees too, because they see that you're just slacking in the classroom and then just whizzing on the test?
So usually when I see that, I feel that when a student who's doing not so well in school is probably just not putting in the effort necessary, but is probably an intelligent student, right? But maybe a little bit lazy. That's usually the impression that I get. Whereas if it's the other way around and the student is just not getting very good SAT or ACT scores and they're getting straight A's in their classes, it might be because their classes may be a little bit easier and they're, like, in comparison with other schools, they maybe are not just taking as rigorous of a course load.
Or they're just not a good test taker. People have test anxiety, you know, it's
And then in that example of, you know, the Einstein effect, there's really bad GPA, they're not putting the effort in, they'll probably get in somewhere good. You know, if they look at all their colleges, they'll probably get in somewhere, but they're minimizing their chances. Mm-hmm. Instead of getting into five or six schools, they may just get into one or two. Mm-hmm. I've seen that too. And that happens because it's an effort thing. And a lot of colleges want to see that you put the effort. They don't want that kind of, you know, vibe on campus or something like that.
Okay, so I'm going to dumb this down just a little bit and let people answer some questions. So my first question that a lot of parents might be wondering is, what types of tests are there and what colleges require these tests? So let's go ahead and just kind of answer that question first.
To Jay we go.
All right. Our standardized test guru. So for you guys. I go with the straight facts. Here we go. How about I start with just, again, the four main categories. So the first category, the main test, the SAT-1 and the ACT. At this point, you're taking the ACT out of a 36 scale as a perfect score and the new SAT out of a 1600 scale. You don't have to bother with deciding one to be more advantageous than another. It simply just comes down to personal preference. My suggestion, Maybe this might be controversial. Start as early as 9th grade and take a practice test of both. But it depends. Sometimes I see 10th grade. I know you said wow. But, you know, dealing with Southern California students, predominantly Asian, that are very hyper-educated, we tend to even see students who take SAT in 7th grade, middle school, mainly for things like Johns Hopkins CTY summer programs. My suggestion, if you're aiming for a school that's in the top 25 U.S. News ranked, so let's say like UCLA at rank 21 or 23 and up, you want to start the SAT or ACT prep early. You begin by taking a practice test of both.
Going back to the question though, I heard that if you're a science inclined student, the ACT might be better because of a science section. Is that still accurate?
I don't think so. I think that the SAT 1600 changed enough where they are incorporating a lot of the science elements. A school like MIT or Caltech doesn't show any preference towards the ACT for the simple fact that it has an extra science section. Rather, I'd look into the secondary testing, which would be things like the SAT 2 subject tests as well as the APs. If you're applying as a bioengineer, it makes sense for you to show that you're strong in bio by taking AP bio and getting a 4 or 5. And it also makes sense to take the SAT 2 biology exam, which will be out of an 800 score. With that being said, I do think that overall, the test scores, whether you take the SAT 1 or ACT, whether you push on to take 2 or 3 SAT 2s and however many APs, it comes down to the student's potential in terms of what they can handle. A lot of times the biggest mistake I see are parents that have this rigid mindset as to they need to take this many, they need to take these subject tests. Every student is different. I want to start with that caveat. Every student has a chance to customize what tests they pursue. And so if you're looking for a straight answer, you're not going to get it from us today.
I'm just going to give a straight answer in terms of, requirements.
We're not giving you a straight answer. I'll give you a straight answer.
In terms of requirements. In terms of requirements.
Remember, Jenny's pregnant.
So, in terms of requirements. So my question was what parents ask in terms of requirements. What tests are required? So Jay had hit one of the points, which is SAT and ACT, SAT 1 and ACT. Before we go into the tips, these tests are something that most colleges will require. They do want an SAT score or an ACT. Score. Most colleges will not say only SAT 1 or only ACT. They will ask for one or the other. The other tests that they require are SAT 2s. Many colleges will require 2 SAT 2s and will recommend 3 SAT 2s. A lot of colleges are now straying away from the SAT 2 subject tests because they feel like AP exams are a better indicator of a student's capability. So those are requirements. Mm-hmm. If you are a student who came and an international student who was not in the United States speaking going to an English speaking high school for 4 years, you have to take the TOEFL. A lot of colleges will also allow you to, if you have a reading or writing score that's higher than a certain score in the ACT or the SAT 1, then they will waive your TOEFL score. So if you want more information about the TOEFL, it's spelled T-O-E-F-L. You can find more information about it. And I think Jay was also going to hit one more, which is kind of testing that's not required, such as Bio Olympiad, Science Olympiad, AMC 12, these type of exams that show more, I guess, academic aptitude by showing, you know, if you have a strength in science or math. And so these are the types of tests that are available and the requirements. And then, Jay, you can definitely go into more of the advice there. But I just wanted to hit kind of the requirements that most colleges ask for. Again, SAT 1, ACT, SAT 2s, and AP exams. And so, Jay, you just hit, like, when should I start thinking about them and taking them? And you said 9th grade. You said, you know, I would recommend that SAT or ACT that you would take it and see which one you like better. What about SAT 2s and APs? What are good times for students to take that?
Sure. So before I go into the SAT 2, just a clarification on the SAT 1. I got some kind of appalled looks about 9th grade. I understand. Maybe it's because I'm Asian. But regardless, just note that there are some other things to account for, like your math level. That's the first thing I check in a student who asks, hey, when should I start the SAT, ACT prep? If they're in 9th grade and they're taking Algebra 2 trig currently, then I'd say that they're more than capable. But if they haven't gotten to beyond geometry, then there's a knowledge deficit that might, you know, change my opinion, my advice for there. Mm-hmm. That being said, most of my students who aim for UCLA higher tend to begin prep early. And the simple rule behind that is because the SAT and the ACT, any standardized practice test, or a standardized test is simply a matter of practice to improve. The more you practice, the better you can get at it. The more time you have to practice, the more time you have to get better at it. And so the general rule of thumb is, if you can start early, do so. Why not? It doesn't hurt you. Sure, everyone else would be going on their surf trips during the summer, and you'll be sitting in an academy or sitting at home doing a practice test. But sacrifice, that's what gets you into good colleges.
It also opens up your 10th grade summer and 11th grade summer. If you start early and you finish in 10th grade, you know, or early 11th grade, it opens up that 11th grade summer for you, which is a little bit more of an important summer than perhaps 9th grade summer.
Yeah, and so if we were going into reasons as to why you want to start early, another one is that many of those summer programs Jenny's referencing require an SAT or ACT score when you apply. Mm-hmm. And so let's be clear here. This standardized test score has really pervaded all bounds. Like, it goes into so much more than just your college application. Jumping into standardized test scores, things like that, just let's do a quick overview. The main tests that you prepare for, you can start as early as 9th grade, but you essentially want to take a test by at least junior year. One of the tests you take is also the PSAT. That's in October. That's an important test to prepare for the to be eligible for the National Merit Scholarship. Everything else is peppered in between, and it comes down to the student scheduling. SAT2s, generally, I would recommend you take them in June after you've taken a related subject as an AP course. Mm-hmm. For example, a most common way of going about this is the AP US history course. You take that typically junior year. You take the AP tests, all AP tests, in May. Subsequently, right after that, in June, you can sign up for the SAT2 US history test. About 80% to 90% of the subject material covered in AP tests will be covered in SAT2. So it's kind of a quick little hopscotch over to the other boat. So that's the general rule of thumb. I normally reserve March until June to help students prepare for either AP tests and then the follow-up related SAT2 tests. Mm-hmm. There are some SAT2s that I'm going to suggest, such as language, Korean with listening, Chinese with listening. Please bear in mind, you want to take it with listening. Any SAT2 subject test that's a foreign language with listening is only offered in November, so you might have to do some scheduling for that.
Most of them are only
offered. Most of them, sorry.
Which ones, well...
Most of them are.
Mm-hmm. Fact checked.
Fake news. Aside from that, I'd say the fourth type of testing, the obscure ones like the Science Olympiad, the Bio Olympiad, those are even hard to sign up for. Students aren't even told by their high school counselors how they go about preparing and signing up for it. Mm-hmm. You might want to talk to your appropriate science teacher, so physics teacher for Phys-Oli.
Or your high school might have a Science Olympiad team or a math club or something like that, which is a lot of times used to prepare for these exams.
Yeah, they have these study groups. So you want to look towards your clubs on your campus to see what you can find. But those are typically in the spring. So think anywhere from March until June. One more big one that I'd want to highlight is in February. There's something called the AMC 10 and 12. Those who don't know, it's the American Math Competition. If you plan on being an engineer, a business econ major, a mathematician, applied math major, this would be something for you to really pursue to show your aptitude. So that's hosted in February. Again, there's so many other different kinds of tests, but generally think of it as... I mean, you want to look towards focusing on subjects that are aligned with your courses. So you can have the AP to SAT2 benefit. And then you also want to look for testing that is reflective of your major. And we'll talk about the whole major aspect in another episode.
And if you have more questions about these, where can they go, Travis?
thehallpasspodcast@gmail.com.
You can email us if you have specific questions, because we can really talk about this all day. We only have about 5 more minutes to really discuss this, but I know a lot of students have questions like, what about taking AP exams without taking the AP AP class? What about taking AP biology as a ninth grader, just the exam, and then not taking the class? So these are very specific questions that students ask me. So if this is you, feel free to email us at
thehallpasspodcast@gmail.com
for more information. So how many times is too many times, Richard? What would you say, can I take the SAT, ACT 20, 30 times if I need to?
Usually most students will take the test, one of those tests, maybe 3 or 4 times. I don't like to say that there's going to be a limit as to how many times you can potentially take it, as long as you are improving every time you take the test. And if you're not, and you're kind of plateauing with your scores, like you just keep scoring a 30 on the ACT over and over and over again, you either need to consider studying in a different way, maybe getting a tutor or going to an academy, or perhaps taking the SAT and studying for that test specifically.
I had a question.
Yes,
Pankaj. Nice dramatic pause.
We choose you.
Dramatic pause. But I forgot the question.
Okay. So going back to what Richard was saying, you know, 3 to 4 times, but colleges do have score choice.
That's ACT, what it was.
Okay. An ACT, an ACT.
It's old age, you know? It's catching up to me, dementia.
He has hit his 40s.
Okay,
so
like, you know, score choice never existed when I was in high school, but can you take the test, like SAT, 7 times and just score choice it out? Will colleges know that you use score choice?
Some schools will offer you the opportunity to do score choice. So what score choice is it grants you the opportunity to pick the specific scores that you would like to submit. So let's say you've taken the SAT 3 times and 2 times you did very well and 1 time you did extremely poorly. For those schools that offer score choice, you'll be able to submit just your 2 best scores and not, you would have the opportunity to not show them that you've taken that SAT a 3rd time. Other schools will not grant you that opportunity. So as many SATs that you've taken, if you submit one of those SAT scores, they will see all of your SAT scores.
So it's kind of dicey with some schools not accepting score choice, I guess.
Right.
In that kind of, I don't know if it's a majority of schools.
Yeah, same thing with super score. You know, same thing that Richard just said, if you took it 3 times and you did really well in the English section and then really poorly on the math section, but the next time you did really well in the math section and really poorly on the English section, then you can pick and choose which sections you want to choose to create what is called a super duper super score. And so you can absolutely
that
do that.
That is the official name.
That is the official super duper super score name.
Are there students that ever like study really hard for math to get an 800 and then like don't care about English, and then the next time they study really hard for English? And
yep.
Then...
So I have students who do that for the ACT, especially during their senior year when it's cram time, and they're like, you know what, forget about all these other sections. I'm just going for this one section. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that, well, it's not a problem. One, you know, you're really then pressured to do that. But also, I wouldn't necessarily recommend doing that. And College Board actually did a study on this, and they found that most students, after taking it the 3rd time, do not improve. I don't know the exact percentages, but I know that they said they found that most students, after taking it a 3rd time, their scores do not go up. And then the other recommendation they had was to not take it every single month. So if there was an October one, a November one, a December one, instead of taking it like that, they do recommend that you put at least 2 months in between each test. So now, by the way, the SAT is offering a test in August, which is awesome because, you know, you can prep for it over the summer and then take it in August and get it over with. So if you take it in August, then you can take it in October and then possibly think about taking it in December or January. So kind of give yourself a little bit more time to then prep for kind of your weaknesses.
I remember, I think Jay improved quite a bit after thousands of dollars in a boot camp. Do you remember
at
that?
Elite.
So I think Pankaj is referencing, I had a seminar the previous week where I talked about my personal experience. So here's my personal experience. You know, I was born and raised in what you'd call a very aggressive hyper education type of family background. Was sent to a place called Elite. That's like a SAT after school academy in Southern California. Went there, I think it was like $1,500 for a tuition for like a 8-week program or something like that, somewhere around that. Otherwise, just a lot of money for my parents to spend, especially when here are the results. I went in with a practice test of a 2180. That was my diagnostic score.
This is back when it was out of
2400. And I remember going through that whole summer boot camp program. And at the end of it all, and we're talking like 2 months of prep, practice test every other week or every week. And I remember going from a 2180 to a 2190. So in a sense, my parents looked at $1,500 investment for a 10-point increase, which is negligible.
Well, that's $100 a point.
That's $100, not even. But what I tried to convey about that is, again, my perspective I'd like to bring to the podcast is the student's perspective. You know, as a student, we always make excuses. We'll say things like, oh my gosh, my teacher sucks at the academy. That's why my score doesn't improve. I'd like to convey my personal experience to say that that is not the case. I fully admit that when I did the academy and went through the motions, my naive notion was to say that just attending the academy was enough to improve my score, but that's not the case. You have to put individual effort. In truth, when your parents sign you up with a tutor or an academy, that's not just a magic pill. They're really there for exerting discipline in your study skills and giving you resources and giving you shortcuts. You still have to cross the bridge. You still have to put in the due diligence and due effort. And obviously, I didn't do that. When I came home after a full day of academy, I was busted tired. And all I wanted to do was boot up my computer and play some Counter-Strike. And that's probably what I did for most of the time. But with that being said, you know, now that I look back, having gone and taken the LSATs, taken the GMATs for grad school, I do understand now that it really comes down to effort. So here's the weird thing, if I can kind of conclude this. Remember how I talked about how GPA reflects effort to an admission officer and then test scores reflect aptitude? Well, once I say that to my students, I then give them kind of a different interpretation. As a student, the test score is also effort. The test score is simply a matter of practice. And so I encourage any student, and I also encourage any parent who hears this, that, oh, my score's not improving because, I don't know, I think I just reached my plateau. I think I just got, and they're stuck at a 29 ACT score. They're born and raised here. They don't have a language barrier issue. I'm going to call BS on that. I'm going to say there's an effort aptitude type of thing that we need to talk about here.
And I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to add one really quick thing along with the excuse thing that you were talking about, Jay. So even if, say, you do have a crappy teacher, mm-hmm. no one cares. The admissions committee Amen. At Stanford is not going to care. They're not going to be like, oh, okay, well, they had a bad teacher. Okay, well, let's bring them into the most prestigious university in the country, right? So even if you have a crappy teacher or you're tired, the college admissions committee isn't going to care. And, like, I don't like standardized testing, but it's just the way it is. And you got to grind it out and make it work because at the end of the day, you got to have it, right? So no one cares if you're tired if you have a bad teacher.
It's like doing abs. No one likes doing sit-ups.
Another analogy.
Punkage is really hitting
that. Obviously, I don't like sit-ups. You can tell, right? I don't like sit-ups.
So, Travis, I think that was a great way to close this. Let's go round robin a little bit. And can you kind of give tips? What would you say to students right now, whatever grade they are? You can choose a grade if you really want to. What are some tips you have for them, advice for standardized testing?
I would just go with prepare. I mean, the biggest thing that I did in high school was that I didn't prepare because I didn't want to. And I mean, my score showed for it. And like, I snuck into the University of Maryland by a side door, you know, but I got in. But like, I didn't have anyone to blame but myself for kind of pretty low test scores relative to my GPA. And at the end of the day, it's just all about taking accountability for yourself. Your test scores, you determine them. You know, you can't rely Amen. On mom or dad or a teacher. It's up to you.
I would say practice a lot. Yeah, same thing you're saying, Travis. And focus on the questions you get wrong. So in math, English, like if you get them wrong, spend the extra 5 minutes, 10 minutes, really figure out where you went wrong in that thought process mm-hmm. and calculation process. And sometimes if you just focus on the wrong ones, you'll get better with the next practice test and the next practice test. And then by the time you know it, by the time the real test comes around, you know, you'll see a pattern.
So I've been teaching SAT for 12 years now, and I got to say this. Okay, guys. Students, number one, there is no substitute for practice. There's something, number two, this is what I tell all of my students. It's really a mind kind of fortitude kind of thing, but my advice, never make the same mistake twice. When you make a mistake, your job is not to look at the right answer and understand why the right answer is right. It's also to understand why the wrong answer is wrong and what you could have done, what you could have recognized, what you could have thought of, what you could have prioritized to get the answer right next time. If you practice that, that's the only study ethos you need to improve in any kind of standardized test that you want.
Damn. Nice. Nice mic drop.
Yeah. I guess I would say your value as a person is not determined by your standardized test scores. At the end of the day, like your GPA, it's just one more number that colleges want to see, but there's still so much that they're going to be looking at when they're evaluating your application. So whereas it's a very important number, it helps us to compare you to other students. Don't stress over it so much so that you destroy yourself as a person.
Focus on your GPA. And then, prep early. And I think that's important. Know what tests are coming up, know what tests are required. If you're a ninth grader, figure out a college list. These are my dream schools, just so you have a general idea of what their requirements are. And that way, you can create a roadmap for yourself. So just kind of summarizing, standardized tests matter because it is a way to show your aptitude on a national and international scale, actually, because students from all over the world are going to be taking standardized testing. SATs, SAT2s, all of these exams are offered not just in the United States. There are many different types of tests, but the ones that you want to look at are SAT1 or ACT. You don't have to do both. SAT2s and AP exams, and TOEFL for students who are English is not their first language and haven't been in the United States at an English-speaking school for more than 4 years. Less than 4 years. When should you take them? Like Jay said, it depends on the student, but he does recommend that starting at ninth grade, kind of understanding ACT or SAT, which route do I want to go into? How many times is too many times? We wouldn't recommend that you do anything over maybe 3 or 4 times. So that's why planning it out and figuring out your study schedule is really important. One of the things that we didn't hit was, do I need a perfect score to go to MIT? Do I need a perfect score to go to an Ivy League? The answer is no, you do not need a perfect score. Colleges are not just looking at your standardized tests as a means of understanding your capabilities and who you are as a student. National exams like BioOlympiad, AMC-12, Science Olympiad are offered as well. Many of them offered in February and March. If you are interested in taking them, and if you have questions, you can go to
thehallpasspodcast@gmail.com.
Nice. Okay, so thank you so much for listening to season 1, episode 2. If you missed any of our episodes, you can actually find it on iTunes or www.theadmissionmasters.com under podcast, or you can visit our website at thehallpasspodcast.com. Again, we would love for you to send us an email of general topics and questions you might want us to cover in our podcast, or any specific questions that maybe you don't want us to cover in our podcast, but you just have questions about. Please make sure you email us at thehallpasspodcast@gmail.com. Next time on Hall Pass, we will delve into extracurricular activities. Till next time, we'll see you later.
Cool runnings.
Yeah, all right.